It's The Conversation on KMUN. It's Wednesday morning. It's 9 o'clock. I'm Graham. I'm your host. Thrilled to be with you today. Looking forward to taking your calls and having a discussion. Let's talk today about historic properties, historic buildings. Vintage buildings are a huge element of this community's character and other communities in the area. Consider the Liberty Theater in Astoria, the lighthouses at Cape Disappointment, the Tillamook Air Museum, all of the homes, all of the commercial buildings built in 1923 downtown after the last major fire. Let's talk about preserving the character of these communities while adapting these vintage properties to suit today's needs. The Tillicum House was built in the 1890s, and it was not originally built as a radio studio. Can you believe it? I can. There was no radio back then. We're going to hear a little bit later from Jack Harris of the Fort George Brewery in Astoria about bringing the iconic car dealership to new life, and also from Joan Herman, who, with her husband John Gasland, have restored period details in their Astoria Craftsman home. How about you? What are your favorite vintage buildings? Doesn't have to be in Astoria. I know that there are thousands of historic properties in our neck of the woods in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. How about you? Do you own an old home? Have you lived in an old Victorian home or an old Craftsman home? I'd love it if you shared your thoughts and experiences. Call in 503-325-0010. And hey, guess what? KMUN is officially open to front desk volunteers again. And as we mentioned in previous weeks, we're rephasing in live programmers, but today we've got Reed at the front desk. Thank you, Reed, for picking up the phone today and transferring callers into the air room. So you're going to have a nice experience saying hello to Reed. He'll let you know where you are in line. He'll remind you to turn your radio off and listen on the phone and all those good things. And as per usual, I'd like to do an icebreaker just to get the phones ringing, just to get your voices warmed up. Cinnamon, aluminum, unique New York. Today's icebreaker is, in the spirit of historic preservation, vintage buildings and homes, tell me about a tool that has significance to you. It could be an heirloom tool, you know, a hammer that was your father's father's hammer that was handed down generation to generation. It could be something more precise, like a sextant from a ship, any interesting stories. I have a friend who inherited all of his grandfather's tools, and it's really a pretty extraordinary collection of special stuff. In the same way that historic homes are special, I think that these tools have a lot of personality and meaning as well. How about you? Do you have any favorite tools that have been passed down? 503-325-0010. This is The Conversation. It's live. It's local. There's three open phone lines, and we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a call, 503-325-0010.
When the
Well, hey, and we're back, and we've got our first caller. Good morning.
Hi, Graham. This is Lori Serafin from the Forstrom House.
Well, hey there from the Forstrom House. How are you, Lori?
Hey, good. I'm not working on the house yet.
You were able to take a few minutes away from your efforts to give us a call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, from our busy schedule up here.
So what's going on over there at the Forstrom House? Forstrom, right?
Forstrom. We have actually had the house for 3 years now, and we think we're about halfway done on our 6-year project.
So how did you know that this was going to be a 6-year project, and what all are you undertaking?
Well, I'm acting as the mostly full-time general contractor on the house, and based on the body of work that we needed to do, I was thinking about 6 years. We started out with a bang with a new foundation and have gone, you know, full steam ahead from there.
Talk about starting with the start.
Yeah, you got to start with you can't frost the cake until it has a base. So,
now, did you start with the foundation because there were some epic issues because the earth was shifting, or what was the purpose of working on the foundation?
We are in the big slide zone at 7th and Grand.
Uh-huh.
You know, where just above where the old high school fell apart at McClure Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the house was broken up into 3 big parts, and they were all moving in different directions.
Wow.
And so we needed a new foundation to save the structure and take it into its next 100 years.
Yeah.
I'm a historic preservationist and wanted to save the house. It's very exceptional.
It is an exceptional house. I've had the pleasure of stepping up on your front porch once or twice.
Yeah, well, you should come see the inside sometime.
I'd love to.
So I don't know if you had any questions. For me, I'm kind of experienced in residential historic preservation. This is my second big project.
Well, that's a lot of what historic preservation is in the residential field. So you said starting with the foundation. How about a couple of other things that you've been faced with dealing with? Because I know that these old homes have been through, you know, it's not like the electrical gets upgraded once in its lifetime. Probably gone through 4 or 5 times at this point, right?
Well, and our house is really different. It's not built at one time. Our first floor is 1894. The basement and the second floor were 1914, and the house was moved when it was renovated in 1914. And so there's just a whole host of updates, renovations, not all of them historically inspired. So I had to pick and choose what to undo and what to save.
Give me an example of something that didn't follow the historic or the... the flavor of the house.
Okay, the 1980s wallpaper.
Oh, boy.
Extensively wallpapered in Victorian reproduction, 1980s wallpaper, had to go.
So they were at least trying to go for Victorian reproduction.
Right, they were trying to in a house that largely has a craftsman interior. I didn't get it. I tore it out. So some of those things, and that's aesthetic kind of. Things, but you know, we had to do the foundation. We had to demolish the basement, and we're rebuilding the basement now. So that includes major electrical updates. We moved the electrical service from the north to the east side of the house. A major plumbing installation of a new heating system in the basement for radiant heat in the floor. You name it, we've done it.
So when the house was moved in 1914, was it just from the neighboring lot to where they dug the new basement, or was it from across town?
It was on the same lot. The house was originally built by Lucy Warren of Warrenton, mm-hmm. and it was on lot number 1 on one half of our property, and it faced north. And Dr. Forstrom moved it so it faced west and straddled both lots.
Cool. Yeah, and you have a pretty large tree on that property as well, right?
There are 3 very large trees, and one's a heritage tree, I believe. It's a Japanese cypress. It's huge. Luke Colvin knows a lot more about it than I do.
Mm-hmm.
He came over after the house, after we purchased the house, to make sure I wasn't going to cut it down.
Well, back to the house. So I had the pleasure of taking the window restoration workshop at Clatsop Community College's Historic Preservation Program.
Okay.
So I learned all about the old method of building these windows.
Yes.
And people can still, you know, build parts for them. They're infinitely repairable.
Yes.
But I do think that in some cases it can be hard to find the proper materials or the proper components to do a correct historical preservation, have you run into any challenges finding the right kinds of materials to do the work that you're doing?
No. No, historic windows are an integral part of the architecture of the old house and should not be removed mm-hmm. under any circumstances. They are engineered to last, and they can be repaired. There are problems when you defer maintenance for 50 years on them, mm-hmm. and we've actually had to replace 5 of the basement windows that had extensive dry rot, but we had exact replicas made by a craftsman in Portland. Mm-hmm. And if you can pay for it, it can be done.
Yeah, well, it just really stood out to me that these designs will not only last 100 years, but with a little bit of effort, they'll last for 100 more.
Oh, definitely. The material is exceptional. And even if they look horrible, it's just amazing what, 10, 12 hours of work can do on a window. And mm-hmm. I try to do a couple windows every year because I have been scared and I haven't ever counted the number of windows in this house.
I seem to recall that you were doing some siding work. Did you have to have that stuff manufactured as well, or were you able to find siding off the shelf?
I have a very talented local carpenter who is my lead carpenter. Mm-hmm. And the south side of the house had a lot of problems with the 1894 siding. You touched it and it turned into powder. Mm-hmm. Had some problems. So we chose to replace the exterior on the south side last summer. And we could not get the siding profile to match the original, so we custom milled it in the driveway.
And your custom milling does match that original profile.
It matches exactly, yes.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
What kinds of resources do you depend on, or are you just a real self-starter and you do all your own research? Are there any groups or organizations in town or in the country that you look to for guidance on this stuff?
I've been doing this a long time, and so I have some definite opinions on how things should be done and how they should look. But before I dive into a project, I usually research it online and go to, see if there's any opinions or papers on the National Trust. And my carpenter is a wealth of information and very experienced. Those are my two go-tos.
And I think I forgot to ask you about the icebreaker, but is there a vintage tool that you're especially fond of?
My husband's favorite tool is... He calls it his demolition pry bar that has his fingerprints all over it.
So like a big pry bar or one of those flat bars?
Yeah, it's a big demolition pry bar. It's his favorite thing.
And they just don't make them like that anymore, right?
No, they don't make them like they used to.
Well, I think that's one of the things that really stands out about the homes and the buildings is the fact that you won't, even if you mill the wood the same, you're not getting the same wood because...
No, you're not.
Wood that's 120, 140 years old was generally coming from older trees, right?
Yes, and the grain is closer together, it's longer lasting, it's high quality, it's not the new wood that is, deteriorates quickly. And so that has driven a lot of long discussions about, doing our front porch decking, mm-hmm. The 3 1/4 tongue and groove, the old growth Douglas fir is not available, and we don't want to replace it with a product that's going to last 7 to 10 years. And so what do you do? So we ended up custom milling here in the house tongue and groove out of a tropical hardwood that's going to last 80 years for the approximately same price.
And what kind of wood is that?
Ippe, I-P-E.
And is that from South America or Eastern Pacific?
It was explained to me it was grown on plantations in tropical areas, and I felt I had conflicted feelings about that, but then it was it lasts 80 years and it's already produced, I don't know, so I just went with it.
I mean, 80 years sounds a lot more like what you're going for than 7 years.
And the cost was approximately the same, for the product. So it's like, okay, and then we had to spend a day custom milling it. And that's okay. We'll do that.
So how about in town or in the area, are there any other buildings or homes that stand out to you as particularly special?
Oh, I wish I knew the names of them all. I'm absolutely in love with the Sanborn House. Wow. That's really amazing. I want to see the inside of the Gustav Holmes mansion, you know, up on, what is it, 33rd and Grand. That house seems very interesting to me. And, of course, I'm a docent at the Flavelle House. So.
Sanborn House is where?
Where is it? Is it, like, 16th and Harrison? Somewhere over in there.
I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, it's that one that's painted beautifully. It's so well done. It's a, you know, high-end Victorian masterpiece. Love
yeah.
it. I don't want to paint it.
Sure, yeah.
But
well, that's,
I can appreciate
boy,
it. Wow.
That's one of the hard parts about old homes is the paint, right? Dealing with
right.
the lead.
Yeah, lead abatement's an issue, but that can be in newer houses also when, you know, they used lead paint up to the 60s.
Yeah, 60s, 70s, something
yeah.
like that.
So, yeah, that's an issue, but, yeah, you see, you have to deal with that. But luckily, our house is a very simple facade because it's the Craftsman exterior, so we don't have all the bric-a-brac to paint.
Not as many nooks and crannies.
Yeah, it's more straightforward, so yay.
Well, if you're tuning in and just joining us, this is The Conversation, and we're talking about historic properties and how we take care of them and how we repurpose them. The Forstrom House is a large house. Do you have plans to do a B&B, or is it just for you guys? What's your long-term plan?
We would like to be part of the community fabric here and host events and fundraisers.
Cool.
We're thinking that in about 3 or 4 years, we can open a very part-time kind of high-end B&B experience for people who want to stay in a museum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, be on an antique bed and be in a house full of antiques. And they're looking for that kind of experience.
So the beds are stuffed with straw then?
No. They're modern mattresses on antique beds.
Gotcha.
So they're full size.
I was just kidding. I know you wouldn't do that to me.
Yeah, so that's kind of the plan. And I'm a board member of Cascadia Chamber Opera, and so we'll be housing a lot of out-of-town artists and such that will be performing at CCO.
Well, it sounds like you've got great things in store. my last question for you is, what attracts you to this work? Why do you do it? Why are you into it?
I grew up in a town that didn't really have a historic downtown or anything old in it. And when we traveled back to Wisconsin, where my parents are from, I was amazed. And I went to my great aunt's Queen Anne Victorian in Minneapolis and was like, oh, this is life. This is, you know, it's all about old houses.
Yeah.
So I started collecting house parts when I was 16 years old.
Well, that sounds like you came by it honestly. I grew up in a town where there were old Victorian homes, and I don't think I had an appreciation for it as a kid.
Oh.
But living in Astoria certainly has revived that for me, or not revived it, but created it.
Yeah, and that's what brought us here. You know, we saw the house, and it was like, oh. Yeah. This is it. This is going to be my, you know, sunset years, you know, end of life project.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I've studied and experienced, and I'm going to put it all to work now.
You never get overwhelmed? You never think, what am I doing?
Yes, there's been a lot of difficulties, mostly, I won't say a lot about it, but mostly caused by local governmental agencies, and that's been the hardest part, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well,
not a lot of support for people doing what we're doing here.
That's too bad. Yeah, I know that the Historic Preservation Office is, while their goal and mission is good, they still do make life difficult for the people that are trying to do the work.
Yeah, and it's not the historic preservation people. It's the city of Astoria. It's their building permit process.
Oh, it's permitting stuff.
It has nothing to do with the fact the house is old, really. Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other conversation. All right, well, Lori, it's so nice of you to call in and share your experience. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Grant.
We've had a caller on line two that's been very patient. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Graham.
How are you today?
I'm good. Hey, a couple comments. The one on tools would be your icebreaker. PV.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I just learned what that was the other day.
Is that right? Well, I'm a local boy, and we grew up with PVs.
Sure.
Listen, it was, it's like Atlas. If you had the right leverage, you could change the rotation of the earth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right leverage, you can move a 40-foot mill log on the Columbia River in the rocks or in the sand. And what we used to do when Mount St. Helens blew about a week later, my God, there were two stories, almost three stories high of timber on both sides of the river, and it was free. And
wow.
But it was very dangerous because this, you know, the river just threw it up there, and then the rest washed out to sea. But, oh, my God, we're... huge fir. Well, I mean, what do you want? Cedar, fir, hemlock.
I'm trying to picture how the volcano puked up a bunch of trees.
Excuse me.
They ended up in the Columbia River, or where?
Well, of course, yeah. They came down the Toodle and the Cowlitz. Oh my God, you're not aware of that?
I can't picture
it
happening.
It was like a big scouring pad. From one side of Mount St. Helens, and oh my God, the river, it took timber, it destroyed the forest, and the forest went down, and then here comes this flow, and it just carried them away like they were toothpicks.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
It all came down through the Cowlitz and then the Toodle, and then it came into the Columbia River, and of course the Columbia River flows out. Oh my God, Graham, you'd have to, there's got to be pictures. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
I'm sitting down in a restaurant one day having a cocktail, and somebody says, turn around, and I turn around and come around. Tongue Point is about, oh my God, 50 feet high of wood coming our way.
Just down the river, huh?
The full river.
That's
it, built
incredible.
Up the whole lower Columbia River on the Washington-Oregon side. I'm surprised that more people aren't hip to that. No, it was something else, man.
Yeah, you know, I've seen all the pictures of the plume and things, but that's a really interesting...
We totally got the effects. We had a light ash. You know, I woke up and my truck was sitting out there. What the heck? You know, I thought the seagulls got it. But it was ash from St. Helens, of course. And then another one is the homes. I grew up in a craftsman home here in Astoria. I'm a local boy. And we had the leaded weights inside the windowsills.
Right.
Remember that? On a cotton cord.
Yeah.
Every window in our home had these weights, and you could hear them. They'd rattle, you know. And then my mother was real careful because about a quarter of the top of our window was leaded glass, and it was. She didn't know if it was toxic or not. Well, I mean, this home's built in the 20s, so I would suggest that lead is not, don't touch it.
Don't eat that glass.
But I tell you, they were easy to clean. There was so much, so there's a few things there. But I'd like the lady's comments. That's interesting that she's, it's a good way to improve things, and then it's a good way to make a living, too. I mean, restorations are expensive.
Yeah, and just it seems like very worth everyone's effort and investment because...
Well, of course. Oh, excuse me, Graham, real quick, the
sure.
Collins House in Uppertown. It's just above John Jacob Astor School, up about a block and a half, and he was a well-known bar pilot in town for years and years. I went to school with his family. It's the Collins House, and it is really magnificent. It has the Turnbulls up front. It has the pillars. It's yellow and white and just scalloped cedar. It's just gorgeous.
That one is very special indeed, yeah.
Yeah, the Collins House, yeah, cool. Okay, buddy.
Well, hey, let's tell people what the PV actually is, though, because we talked about it, and I know what it is, but do you want to describe
PV,
the tool?
Okay. My PV is, it's roughly 5.5 feet long, And three quarters of it is a huge piece of walnut that is trimmed, and it's going to fit into a metal bracket with a point on it, like a pike or a spike. And then hanging off the lower end of the peavey is a free hinge, and it's another spike, but it's curved. And so what you do, you come up to your log, and you look, which way do you want to move it? Well, you're going to turn it, whatever. You bite in with the hook, and you want the hook on the opposite side of you because you're going to pull. And my God, it is something else. It is like magic. And what a guy would do, like say we're 35, 40-foot log, Graham, I mean, it's 5 foot through, but it's sitting on some rocks, and you don't want to get your bar chains, you know, next to the rocks or the sand, yada, yada. So you want to roll it over a little bit. Plus, sometimes the guys did, their bars weren't long enough to go through the tree, so you have to turn the tree over a little bit and then complete your cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing tool. It's very simple. It's almost Nordic looking.
And PV was the manufacturer, right?
Yes, of course. Well, yeah. It was, and now they make them out of plastic.
Wow.
Play heck to try to find a, but mine is walnut, and it. I can tell you what, it sure. There's no way in heck a guy or a couple guys can even move the material, but one guy, without a sweat, if he knows what he's doing, he just turns that thing over.
Yeah.
And everybody's laughing, you know. So we complete our cuts and load up. Oh my God, Graham, we cut so much firewood. We gave it away to the nuns up in at Star of the Sea School. We gave everybody that was involved there. My garage, my property was full of firewood, and it was all free. And it just cost me, a little time and effort to go get it.
Very cool. Yeah, those PVs are incredible. It's essentially a lever, and you can roll a big log around.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it looks like a large. Trying to think of some sort of a tool or a hand tool, but yeah, it's
the handle of a shovel.
It's pretty herky. Down below where it meets the metal, that's for 10 inches around in there. But and then it tapers out into where you're going to put your hands on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's comfortable. And my God, it's so strong.
Yeah, I think your PV might have been a little bigger than the one that I used. But we were up at the Cannon Beach Translator site, and that's on a 60-foot pole.
Uh-huh.
And we were just scooting around all over the place with one person. It was incredible.
You know, everybody that's around it at that time that something's happening, we all start laughing.
Yeah.
Because you're moving incredible weight.
Yeah, thousands
of
pounds.
Distance. And with one guy.
Yeah.
My God.
It's
incredible. It's so much fun. Okay, well, gosh darn, you know, I'm really proud of you. If I were you, I'd be all talked out.
Well, hey, I appreciate the call. And
yeah, thanks,
call back anytime.
Bye.
Bye. I mentioned before that we'd hear from a couple of guests pre-recorded by Kathleen. And since we heard about window rehabilitation and restoration from Lori at the Forstrom House, why don't we hear from Joan right now? So Joan Herman is an Astoria city councilor, a businesswoman, and a longtime Astoria resident. When she and John went looking for a new home, they found it in one of the city's historic districts. And here is Kathleen Morgane's interview about their efforts to restore some of the home's original style detail. Here's Joan Herman.
One of the iconic views of Astoria is as you're coming over the bridge from Washington and you're at the top and you make that curve to come down, you can see starting from below and going up the hill, the layers of the different architectural styles
that evolved over time.
In Astoria, buildings like the Flavel Building and Fort George Brewery, all the 1920s storefronts as you're going down downtown, that tells you where you are. It gives you a sense of place.
The residential neighborhoods, too, give their contribution to that sense of place.
As a resident of Astoria, was period architecture, when you bought the house, was that part of what your decision to buy the house?
It definitely did. We wanted to get a craftsman home, specifically a classic craftsman. So one built in the early 20th century, you know, really a response to the frilly Victorian style of architecture, you could say. So craftsman being eminently practical and built for the common man. So that's really what we wanted. We love the style of architecture.
But the picture wasn't complete. The house had undergone some changes since it was originally built. What made you decide to change the changes and bring back its original look?
Well, my husband and I, John Gasland, we love historic homes. We love historic architecture in general, and especially the craftsman style, which was really prevalent in the early 20th century. So when we were looking for a house, that's what we were looking for. But one of our non-negotiables is it had to be accessible because I'm in a wheelchair. So that really weeded out a lot of potential homes. So when we found our house, well, one, of course, we didn't know it was our house at the time. We really liked the house and it could be easily made accessible, but a previous owner had removed all of the original windows. Well, all but about one or two of two dozen windows in the house. And I was pretty naive, and even my husband was a bit at the time, because we really weren't aware of that until we got into the house and we saw the homes around ours. And we live in a beautiful neighborhood with other early 20th century homes, all with their wooden windows intact, their multi-light windows or multi-paned, as I used to call them. And we realized our windows did not look right. And then we learned that our home, even though we're in a National Registered District, a neighborhood, our home was considered non-contributing because of the windows. So that really inspired us to bring it back to its original. And we've been doing that, I should say John has, because I haven't done a lick of the work, just provided the pushes, not that he needed any. For the last 4.5 years, we bought the house about 5.5 years ago. So gradually we've done about 6 windows a year, and we'll finish the final 6 this summer.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. You can't just go down to Home Depot and buy this style of window off the shelf.
You cannot. Now, you can buy composite windows, which are not authentic. Now, the composite window manufacturers will tell you they're authentic, but they're not. So to get the wooden windows, just like the ones our home came with, we go to a small builder in Portland, and that's all he does is build this wooden window sash. So these wooden windows, and as you can imagine, there are a lot of homes in the Portland area that can benefit from these windows. So not only Portland, but surrounding communities. So that's where we go. Since we started our wooden window project, apparently DK Windows out in the Miles Crossing area does make authentic wooden windows sash. So we wouldn't have had to go to Portland, but we have been so impressed with the builder we've used there that we've just kept working with him.
Are the windows the only thing that you did to bring the house back to its period look?
Well, I'd say that's really the main thing, because the house was in really good shape otherwise, and the windows were fine. It's just that we thought they were ugly. I mean, they just did not fit the house. They looked modern in kind of a 1950s way, which obviously for a 1917 house isn't quite right. We have done some other work on the house. I should again qualify that. John has done all of the work. My husband is a really talented, skilled craftsman, so he's able to undertake this work. We did oversee some beautiful landscaping on the outdoors. Of course, on the outdoors, if it's landscaping, done by Jessica Schleif, who's a landscape artist in Astoria. And that's really made a huge difference, I think, in our home's curb appeal. John's doing a lot of work indoors as well. We ripped up all the carpet. The house was pretty much wall-to-wall carpet, even in the kitchen. So that's all been ripped up. There was beautiful old-growth fir floors underneath the carpet, and we had a local company, J&J Hardwood Floors, redo the floors, and they did a beautiful job. And so a lot of things like that we've done. We really love, again, the style of old homes, and the builders back then just did such beautiful work. So there's no reason to try and improve on that style.
What has been the response from some of your neighbors or people who might have known the home before the previous changes?
They've been really, really appreciative. And right now we've got some plywood and in three of the upper story windows that are getting new wooden windows this summer. And so it looks terrible. In fact, we've had a few composite window sellers come by and offer to restore the windows for us, but no, thank you. The neighbors have been very appreciative. And it's a big walking neighborhood. So we do see quite a few neighbors and probably people from outside the neighborhood just strolling through. And again, they're very appreciative.
The changes you made, did it make it feel more like home?
Definitely. Now when I look at the house, when I'm coming down from up above the street and looking at the new old style windows, it just looks so much more appropriate and really welcoming than the previous single pane, you know, these large expanses of glass did.
What advice would you have for other people who are thinking about turning the clock back on their own houses?
Well, the first thing that John did is he went down to the Historical Society and found a picture of our house right after it was constructed. So it was probably taken, if not in 1917, then not long after 1918 at the latest. So find a picture of your house that's original. And then I would talk with a historic preservationist, if you can get a hold of someone like John Gutenberger, or go to the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. Just get as much information as you can to make sure that if you do, in fact, want to restore your home to its original, that you know what that means. I mean, if you don't want to do that, that's another matter. But there are a lot of people in the community who are very knowledgeable about historic preservation.
Well, Joan Hormann, thank you very much for talking with KMUN today.
Oh, you're so welcome, Kathleen.
That's Kathleen Morgane speaking with Joan Hormann about some of the historic preservation they've done on their original Craftsman home. If you're just tuning in, this is The Conversation on KMUN. It's a live and local call-in show, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. What are your thoughts today on historic preservation? Have you done something to your home that restored it to its former glory in some way, whether it's pulling up carpet and linoleum and finding the original fir floors underneath and having them refinished by someone like J&J Hardwoods, who did just incredible work here at the Tillicum House on our 125-year-old wood floors. What about windows? Anything else? Are there historic properties in town or in the region that you're especially fond of? Would love to hear your thoughts. John Gutenberger's name came up. I can also throw out Lucian Swerdloff, Brian Pietrowski, all who help out and offer their expertise and advice in town for anyone who's doing their projects and do extraordinary work themselves. And if this stuff does interest you, I really encourage you to look up the Historic Preservation Program at Clatsop Community College. I think it's one of the coolest things that we have going here and at the college, along with the Maritime Program. So much to learn, so much to do, so much to appreciate. And I think one of the things that I love about this topic is, we'll keep using windows as an example. I love it when we discover that the way we used to do something turns out to be better than the way we do something now. And it could be because it lasts longer, it could be because it looks better, it could be because it works better. But new is not always better, and it's interesting how you can see fads come and go. I think of sometimes remodeling old homes as a type of, archaeology. It's like an archaeological dig, getting down to the bottom of what once was. We've got a couple callers on the line. First caller, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Graham, yeah, thank you for bringing up your historic preservation program. It's so dear to my own heart and so many people's. One of my favorite houses in Astoria, I'm relatively new, I'm 2 years here, is the Fisher House up the Grand and 12th. And that home has been completely rehabbed by a contractor friend of mine who worked in Portland. So that's one of my favorite, you know, I run a company and started a company, a wood floor restoration company in Portland, and ran it for 30 years and have worked in thousands of period homes in Portland. Mm-hmm. And they're so very much like your historic areas here. Some of the appointments in the story are a little bit different. They have kind of a Scandinavian hit to my eye anyway. But anyway, we're in the Historic Preservation League of Oregon. I do own the A.E. Doyle House in Portland in the Irvington neighborhood, built in 1899. I've been working on that house for over 20 years. I don't know if I recommend anybody buy a house like this. Okay. Because it's so involved, but the rewards are tremendous. They give you such context and such history. And in Portland, we are in some level struggling to keep them from being scraped and replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been some of that, but there's various pressures, and it's almost kind of a political thing. But anyway. You use the term urban archaeology, and that is kind of what we were involved in, you know, ripping out miles of carpeting and taking it to the landfill, sadly.
Yeah, so,
but we restored wood floors, and also we replaced them, too. So,
since you're a flooring person, can I ask you about that you know, sort of archaeological component to it? Do you get the sense that people were sold on linoleum at one point, and then they were sold on carpet at one point, or did people just genuinely love it, or were they trying to make their house less like a barn, or what was the motivation?
Well, that's an interesting history right there. FHA accepted carpet in new-built homes in the 50s, and until that point, everything had wood floors. They had oak. It was either red or white oak. And, of course, there's miles of Douglas red fir, which are excellent floors as well.
Mm-hmm.
We did miles of Douglas red fir in the Portland homes, and you have a very similar thing here in Astoria. And, in a way, fir didn't get no respect for a long while. It was considered, oh, you know, it's just fir.
Too soft?
I'm sorry?
Too soft?
It is softwood. It's a conifer, but actually old Douglas fir is pretty tough and pretty hard. And these floors in these homes last 100 years. They last longer. It depends on the care they've been given. So we did a lot of that work. And the homes, my home in Portland was built in 1899. It's the A.E. Doyle House. And it was fairly common to retrofit oak in period homes that had fir, and they'd go over with top nailed. It was about 3/8. In fact, I guess it's, I forget the dimension, 15, 16, but 3/8 thick. And they were retrofitted, and we could always tell a home that had been retrofitted because the first rise and the first stair would be shy 3/8 of an inch, and it would show up in other areas and cross sections of and stuff like that. So you become very familiar with what is used in homes and, mm-hmm. and the retrofitting of homes. And you were talking about what was done to a lot of these homes. I think maybe the word you're looking for is remodeling.
Remodeling.
So we did redo a fair amount of remodeling in Portland homes, and I'm sure you got the same dynamic here. But people love these homes, and they're on the internet. They're plugging into everything. They really invest themselves, and there's nothing like sort of shaping your own environment. It's a very satisfying process. It's also a lengthy. I'm sure an expensive process too, but the rewards are really there. So it's important that these homes stay intact or go back to where their original format. It is very difficult to improve on the home, the way the homes, certainly floor plans, the way they're originally conceived and built and the way they float. So that's
okay, give,
old
give
contractor's
me a,
take on it, yeah?
Give me a history lesson on floor plans here. Is it possible, you know, when was the indoor water closet, when did that become ubiquitous in homes?
I mean, when did the bathrooms first come in?
Yeah.
Well, I would think that's a long, that would be a very old home. A very old home in Portland would be like mine, 1899. In fact, my home in Portland it's the fourth oldest home in the neighborhood there. I would think 1880s or something. You do have some pretty old homes in Astoria, as it's such an old city. If you're talking about the privy out in the backyard, you're talking about a pretty old environment, a very rural environment, I think. I didn't really.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. I remember that. Reading a book that described the first indoor water closet in a home in a town, and I'm trying to remember when that was set, but it must have been mid to late 1800s, huh?
Do you know the name of the gentleman who invented the toilets?
Isn't it Mr. Crappy or Mr. Crapper? Or
Harvey
something?
Crappy. You got it, buddy.
Yeah.
Well. Can't Harvey Crapper or something like that. Can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Well, I love what you said about you don't recommend anyone do it, but you love it and the rewards are great. So there's.
I love it. The rewards are great. And sometimes I could have walked by my house, Graham, and going, yes, I don't own it. But in fact, I do own it, and I'm grateful for that. And certainly, we built value, and they're very valuable now in Portland and in Astoria, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, if a home was built 50 or 75 years before you were born, and will last another 50, 75 after you're dead, then we're just stewards of the homes, right?
We're just stewards of these homes. We really don't own these homes, you know.
Yeah, and it's a.
I think that's true.
It's a. I mean, not being a local person, I have a strong affinity for the forests and the wood and the trees, and I have what I consider to be a pretty strong understanding of the difference in old wood. It started from musical instruments, the fact that old guitars and old cellos and things sound better than new instruments, and there's just something really magical about wood.
Well, I am a string musician as well, and you're talking about the craft of luthry, being a luthier, and that is another level of acoustic craftsmanship that I'm a player, not really a builder, but that is enormously interesting, the spruce, the Sitka spruce that went into soundboards and the maples and Gibson instruments. So there's another whole avenue of exploration and the evolution of stringed instruments built around the turn of the century, and still very viable and still very wonderful, and they have wonderful tone vis-a-vis being played all those years, and also from the materials they're constructed with. So
right.
you're on the right track there, bud.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you, Graham.
Have a great day. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And you're on line two. You've been very patient. Hey, you're on the air.
Hi, Graham. I have a 1910 Craftsman in the Shively edition of Astoria, and it has been repaired bits and pieces over the years, but nobody who has talked old houses has mentioned curtain walls within the homes.
Curtain walls. Tell me about those.
Your 2x12 fur, that was it. There's no studs. There's no two sides to the wall. Well, there's not a front, the studs, and a back. They were just, this house, when it's been torn back to the bare wood, almost looked like a frame was built and the boards were dropped down to be held upright to make the walls.
And so when, you said 1910?
Yes. That's when it showed up on the county records. It might be a little older.
That is a new wall design to me. I've never heard of that before.
A real pain when it comes to putting in new plumbing or new electrical wiring.
There's nowhere to hide it.
There's nowhere to hide it. You kind of run it along the baseboards.
I'm curious if those walls work well from an insulation perspective.
They're all interior walls, so insulation there isn't it.
Gotcha.
The exterior walls did have framing and covered in cedar shakes, the original cedar shakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the windows had been replaced with, dare I say it, the plastic windows.
Right.
I think they're called vinyl. But they were kept in line with the age of the house. And a quick glance at the house, you can't tell that the windows are new windows, all 34 of them.
So you've done some work to the house, or you just appreciate it, or what's
no,
your story with preservation?
No, the house has had work done to it. The basement has been replaced. It was basically wood pressed up against the earthen walls, so that rotted out over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be poured cement basement, but yeah, and no, I don't think I live within a historical district. So what we've done to the house, we've tried to keep it in line with Craftsman, but nobody in the city's telling me what color to paint my house.
Well, that's good. You're going with hot pink then?
Well, we rather like the hot pink with the lime green.
Yeah.
Yeah. And last time my house was painted, my knee braces on my roof actually did turn out kind of a bright panty pink. And my painter grabbed me and said, oh, no.
Oh, no.
And my comment was, oh, definitely no. And that was dealt with, their cranberry. But yeah, try to keep her looking the way she looks. There are other craftsmen in the neighborhood, and we all try to keep them looking the elegant elderly ladies they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and shout out to the craftspeople who built these homes.
Oh, my house was built out of scrap lumber, parts of it. One of my living room walls has the end of an apple box with the paper still on the end of the box saying whose brand it was.
And what function is that apple box serving in the architecture of your
wall
home?
In my living room.
Wow.
It was like they were filling in a door gap, and they used whatever lumber they could find to fill in the door gap.
And you had to pull something away to reveal that, or that was just left there whole time?
No, we had to rip her down all the way to the bare wall.
Gotcha.
And it was left. We laughed about it, and we left it.
Very cool. No mummified cats in the walls or anything like that?
Not that we know of. Old newspapers in the attic, yes.
That's
but
fun.
Nothing terribly strange. And a 1 cent penny was found in the basement when they did the floor in the basement. Excuse me, that was an Indian head penny. Of course, pennies are 1 cent.
Right.
Yeah. And that was the only very old thing that was found, was the one Indian head penny in the basement.
Well, cheers to you for taking care of another one of Astoria's grand old ladies.
Yes, they have to be maintained.
Absolutely.
And thank you for the program this morning. It's been interesting.
Thanks for the call. Call back anytime.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Looks like we've got somebody waiting on line one here. Hey, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I've had three old houses two in Astoria and one in Jewell. And they all have had the tungu for flooring. And I myself refinished them after sanding using linseed oil.
Cool.
And the Green Envy paint thinner is the very best for the linseed oil to soak in with.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just put it on until it did not go in anymore, and then let it set for a few hours, and then towel it. You have to totally wipe it down or it gets all sticky.
Hmm.
But they make beautiful floors.
Yeah, linseed oil and turpentine, you know, high quality linseed oil, high quality turpentine was what our window restoration person really highly recommended for mm-hmm. taking care of this old wood.
Yeah. And I prefer the Green Envy thinner than the turpentine.
Mm-hmm.
Myself personally, in using it, it seemed like it went in better. But as for old construction, my Jewell houses were an old logging camp from maybe the late 20s. the exterior walls are 1x12 vertical and shiplap horizontal and no studs at all. I've always wondered how they built that. I think they must have done it on the ground and then lifted them into place.
Mm-hmm.
Only an old contractor friend who's worked on old houses said he saw some like this in timber, but there are very, very few homes that are built that way. The other tip I've learned is that, one thing about linoleum, a lot of the old linoleum, they did not glue down, which was wonderful. You just lift it up, and there's the old wood. But the old glue is a black glue that dissolves in vinegar. And so I just spray vinegar until it stopped absorbing and cover it with plastic and come back hours later. And if it was real thick, I would do it several times. If not, I would do it once or twice. And the last one, I would put a lot of vinegar on and just scrub like crazy. And it came out really nice.
Well, that is a lot of work, and I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I'm too old for it now, but yeah. But I love those old fir floors like that.
And do you know the age of these houses that you're talking about?
Well, I still own the old duplex, and the trouble they have, they would push houses together. So the duplex has some older piece that was pushed together and created in 1920, and a third added on, off-created in its form now in 1920. But I don't know how old the oldest part of it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then another house was 1880s, but I sold that.
That's just amazing that a house built 140 years ago is still standing.
Yeah, I mean, and it is that old fir.
Right.
And I'm frustrated. I have old fir flooring and bits and pieces, but quite a bit of it. But I can't give it away. I want to give it away. But I won't throw it away. It's just too amazing.
Well, I'm sure there are people out there who would love to take you up on that offer.
Yeah. Well, I have to keep putting it out there. So thank you.
Thanks for the call, Susanna.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here we are at the top of the hour, coming up on 10 o'clock. We've got headline news coming up in just a few minutes, and then Jerry Middaugh will be bringing you some great folk music until the noon hour. And then we'll hear from Terry Gross and Fresh Air. I really appreciate everyone that's called in today. We didn't have time to get to the interview with Jack Harris about their efforts to turn the Lovell Auto Showroom into a brewery, but maybe we can play that interview next Wednesday on The Conversation. Thanks again to everyone who called. I really enjoyed exploring that topic with you today. We could have gone on and on. Especially love hearing about why people are passionate about historic preservation, what it means to them, and like that one caller said, just about the reward that you get from it. I think that that's a really, really special thing. And if historic preservation isn't your thing, I hope you do have those things in your life that give you a lot of self-satisfaction and purpose and work. And, you know, like you said, I wouldn't recommend doing it. I love it. Labor of love. You are listening to KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. We stream live on the internet at kmun.org, and you can find us on a mobile device using an app such as the TuneIn app or the Free Radio app. And I guess that's about all I have to say today. We're ending a couple minutes early, so we'll go out on a little bit of music. Here is the Lee Fields and the Expressions with Blessed with the Best. Thanks again for listening and for calling, and for supporting your local community radio station. Take care, everyone.